Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's show, Routine Town Hall Meetings, Part 1. Here we go. Well, we've talked about managerial communications before, maybe maybe several many times about how important they are. And one of the documents we have out on the website is our sample communications plan. This is one of the documents that we get a lot of requests for, and it happens
pretty popular.
It happens all the time, right? And in that document, we recommend a typical manager do a series of regular communications with her team and using different media, different frequencies, and covering a bunch of different topics. And that sample communication plan really lays that out. I think it's a great place to start. Now, we've also mentioned many times Horstman's famous law of organizational communications, right? Say something. I love this one. People always take it. They always have to think an extra couple of seconds about it to get it. But it says saying something and seven times. And half of your people will say they've heard it once. Say something seven times, and half of your people will say they've heard it once.
Yeah, you just have to keep saying the same things. People hate stump speeches for politicians, but politicians know people aren't going to remember everything. And so, other than the witty put-downs that they make against one another. And so, you have to just do like Churchill says and pick one point and just bang it to death and hit it again with a great big whack.
Yeah, anybody who's taken a kind of basic marketing course knows that, right? You have to say the message over and over and over, frequency and reach. So, you know,
exactly.
And your organization, everybody has different filters. There's all sorts of sandpaper just rubbing people raw and rubbing at your meaning. And it takes saying it over and over and over again to get it through.
Yeah. And one way to reach further down into your organization and have more control of your message is to conduct a town hall meeting. This is really kind of the final meeting that Manager Tools would consider routine, though it's certainly not frequent. You know, it continues the greater reach and less frequency of the line of weekly one-on-ones, weekly staff meetings, and then also periodic skip levels. And I feel like we're harkening back to the old days, Mike. We have 11 points to cover with town hall meetings. Yeah. But most of them are pretty short. It's just a detailed walkthrough of how to get ready for a town hall meeting. So let me walk you through them big picture. Number one, town halls are only for three-level or greater organizations, and they are for everybody in your organization. So if it's just you and some directs, you're not going to have a town hall. You can just have a staff meeting and it counts. There are two different types of town halls, routine town halls and change town halls. People make this mistake all the time, and they do the same kind of prep for a change town hall that they did for a routine, which is not good. But this cast is only about routine because change town halls are different. Routine ones are you're probably going to hold them only twice a year. You could do it more often. You could do it three times a year if you enjoy them and you feel like you've got an engaged audience. But they're not something you do monthly, that's for sure. Please, our fourth point, hold a routine one before you hold a change one. Change ones often bring up points that are delicate or could be tense. And if you don't know what you're doing, it shows. And that makes your message, your process will corrupt your message. It's okay to have big meetings, our fifth point. You could have 300 people in a town hall, it's fine. But distant directs may mean you may have to have multiple instances. We'll walk through an example of that. Logistics and physical space get harder as you get bigger. So there's some preparations you need to consider there. Please, whatever you do, don't have a meeting longer than 90 minutes. People just can't tolerate much more than that. And frankly, 60 minutes is fine as long as, next point, 30 minutes for questions. It's so easy for you to communicate downward, folks. It's hard for people to communicate upwards. You think you're just a nice person. They don't see you as a nice person. They see you as the boss, or worse, the boss's boss's boss. They're not going to ask you every question on the tip of their tongue. You have to create space for questions as opposed to just saying, interrupt me whenever you like, because people won't do that as frequently as you'd like them to. Number nine, routine town halls do have pre-prepared handouts. We recommend you prepare them in advance and give them to people at the start of the meeting. We do have a recommended agenda for you. And finally, we recommend you start on time, just because otherwise you'll be behind and the last thing you want to cut time from is questions.
Yeah. And it's a meeting and all meetings start on time.
Yeah. That'd be good.
Why wouldn't we?
That'd be good. How many times do we need to say that in our lifetimes?
Right. Okay. So let's get clear on who should conduct them and who attends them. Because sometimes I hear people, they describe a town hall meeting and go like, that's not a town hall meeting. So the manager tools town hall meeting, who should have them and who should attend?
I think some people say town hall because it sounds cool. You know, it's like, ooh, let's have the town get together like and chat. And,
or something.
Yeah. Wow. You know what? If you just got one level of directs, it's not. Yeah. So you only host a town hall meeting for your organization if you have skips in your organization. Okay. That's the starting point at a minimum.
Right. Meaning that you have people that report to the people that report to you, right? Skip.
Yes.
Yeah. I skip one level down.
Yeah. Now, if you have five managers who work for you, or if you have five people who work for you, just five, and one of them is a manager, and so therefore, and he has one direct, you really don't have skips. Okay.
Right.
And that doesn't count. When we say skips, we really mean an order of magnitude greater than the number of directs. So if you have five directs and each of them have five directs and suddenly you've got 31 people in your organization, that's more of what we mean with skips. If you could just ask that one direct to come to a staff meeting, that's the equivalent of a town hall in terms of getting your message out to everyone. But look, it's simple reasoning. You don't need a town hall if you don't have skips because, again, you just have a staff meeting. There's a joke that Ron White, who's a little bit vulgar at times, but
he's
really
funny, though.
Funny
the guy is funny.
Like, comic. He's funny.
He can't think stupid.
Right. He talks about being in a very small airplane going from Flagstaff to Phoenix. And for those of you who don't know geography in southwestern U.S., it's listed as an hour flight, but it's 100 miles. And it's only an hour flight because how small the planes they fly between them. It's 100 miles. I mean, it's nothing at all. You can drive it in an hour. An hour and a half. And the pilot announces that they lost some oil pressure on the intercom. And White says, as a joke, that was stupid. They could have just looked over their shoulder and said, hey, guys, we lost some oil pressure, right? Just right to them because they're sitting right there in the same area that they're sitting. There's no big fancy cockpit. Look, frankly, you may not feel you need a town hall if you have only three levels, right? If you have skips. It certainly doesn't hurt to get everybody together. And our guidance here applies if you're going to do it. If you're going to call it a town hall, follow this guidance. But if you're doing one-on-ones and your directs who are managers are also doing one-on-ones and you're doing quarterly skip levels, and we're not talking about 20 managers and 10 each, so a total of 200 people, you probably won't get as much value out of a town hall as an executive who has 600-700 people in her organization. That said, Mike and I would do them if we had three in our organization, because we'll be assuming we soon will have four or five levels in our org, and we want to be ready to be good at town halls when we have five levels in our organization.
Yeah, good point. You're not necessarily good at them the first time you do it.
Yeah, exactly.
I can tell you. Yeah. Speaking from experience.
Is that right? You can tell?
I can tell you. Yeah.
As we've said before, good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment. And look, something else that I'm constantly amazed. I don't think I'll ever get over being amazed by this. Everyone in your organization attends, okay? This is not like a skip level meeting where you might intentionally not have your directs attend so you can get a more open communication from your skips. Everybody comes. You, your directs, their directs, their directs, their directs, everybody. Nobody gets exempted because they're important or, you know, I kind of know everything. I work closely with you. I don't need to go. No need to have different levels of people attend at different times. A town hall is a town hall. When we call it a town hall, we're trying to send a message that we're not making a distinction about who. We're all in the organization. Yes, I'm the leader, and so I'm going to talk, but you know, I guess I'm the mayor of the town, but everybody else is just a citizen, and I'm updating everybody on what's going on. You don't have to have your directs come only to the first one and let everybody else come to the other ones. Your directs can come with their directs or not with their directs. It doesn't matter. It's strictly a scheduling issue and it's not a problem. Geographically, that may make a difference, but it doesn't matter. The message is the same at every meeting you have, assuming that you've got a big enough organization where you can't have just one town hall. And by the way, everybody needs to come just once. Your directs don't need to come every time to count heads or do anything like that. The problem is that someone is going to be trying to convince their boss that none of the times work for them. And, you know, I just have to tell you, it's just dumb. It's just dumb. It's stupid and selfish and wrong. But anyway, tell their bosses, look, I'm going to expect everybody to come. And we're going to talk more about this in a minute. Tell them to have everybody there. Have them come, period. When somebody says, I can't make it, say, you're mistaken. I'll see you there. Well, you don't understand. Yeah, I do. I just told you to be there. You're going to be there. I don't pull rank very often. Today, rank, be there. See you then. I continually surprise. Managers come to say, well, one of my guys said he can't be there. Yeah, sorry, I can't pay you next week. Oh, is that a problem for you? Yeah, I know the feeling. See you at the meeting. Everybody, folks. I promise you, if you don't send a message of everybody, 5 to 10% won't come. And they'll brag about not coming. And they'll brag about being too busy. And what's funny is, they would never brag to your face, I'm too busy to come to your meeting. They want to be able to be perceived as trumping you. And by the way, at Manager Tools, we're not terribly excited about power. We're not. We believe relationships are what drives success in really, really high-performing organizations. On the other hand, we do have power. We're aware of what it is, and we can use it. We rarely use it, but when we do, we win. Okay. So when your direct says, I can't, you say, sorry, change your plans. Now, look, okay, if you're doing them all in 1 week, and this guy's been scheduled for vacation for a month, okay, I respect that. And tell him, I expect you to go talk to your boss and send me a note that you've talked to your boss about the meeting and give me the high points after the meeting. I'm okay with that. But if you start out with, I'd like everyone to attend, it's going to be downhill from there. So, everybody.
Everybody. Okay, so you mentioned that there are two types of town halls. Like, there's routine town halls and there are change town halls. Tell me a little bit about that. What's the difference between the two?
Yeah, we're, in this guidance, we're just talking about routine town halls. We want you to get used to running them, okay? Change town halls are slightly different. In terms of preparation and materials, they're usually more stressful. They require more careful advanced preparation. You'll probably have to work with your team of directs to make sure you get it right. And even though we'll be repeating some of this guidance a little bit in the Change Town Halls podcast, which we'll do sometime in the future, we'll refer to this one more. So that one will be probably shorter than this one. But we'll have to expand the details of the guidance about how to deliver guidance and so on. So there are two different ones. And the only one we're talking about here is routine. I mean, 75% of this applies. The core stuff of this applies. It's just some of the content, some of the kind of questions and so on you need to be ready for. And so we'll do that in a separate cast. Because if we mush them all together, people will get confused and hear some of the change guidance and apply it to the routine or vice versa. And we don't want that.
Okay, now we talked about who comes, right? And who should have them and who are the people who attend. Now, we're talking about routine here. So routine town halls, how often should we have them? I've seen people do them, you know, frankly, once a month. And that seemed to be a bit much and seemed to, in some sense, subvert the chain of command, if you will. So I didn't like that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I've seen people do them, you know, once a year. And that seemed a little too infrequent. Yeah. So what's the right frequency of town halls?
When I was typing this, when I started typing this show several weeks ago, I just started typing and I had a typo in the word and it ended up changing it to biennially. Biennially, by the way, means every 2 years. It's not like biweekly, which means every 2 weeks or twice a week. Biennially means every 2 years and biannually means twice a year. And we do recommend, as a general rule, doing them twice a year biannually. It's probably a good planning window. You could choose to do them more frequently, or you could choose to hold off a little bit. Look, if you're doing one in June and you're in the US and then you're thinking, I'll do one right before Christmas may not be a good time to do one, right? People are going to be out, vacations, all that kind of stuff. People leaving early in the day to go Christmas shopping or whatever. Don't do that. So you might wait till January when nobody's going anywhere because they're paying off their credit card bills. If you have a three-layer organization and you just did some really good skip levels with your folks, and it just so happens that the periodicity of that coincides with the periodicity of biannual town halls, you might choose to wait a month or two before you do a routine town hall. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't hurt to do one around major corporate announcements or a big kickoff or something like that. You know, you could choose to do one at an off time based on something like that. There are all kinds of things that could rise to the level of, you know, that's three quarters of a town hall, and the other quarter will be something else I want to talk about, and the rest is going to be questions, and so we'll do one. Nothing wrong with that. And if somebody said to me, I did four in 1 year, I would say, well, okay, tell me what you did them on, right? Wouldn't be the end of the world. If you told me you did six or eight, I'd be like, that's probably too much. To Mike's point, to your point, Mike, about subverting the chain of command, I see a lot of people who love getting in front of people who are executives who say, let's have a town hall every other month. Then it makes the executives' organization, right? And then suddenly the lower level managers just don't have as much.
Right. It's very powerful, clear when people are doing that, is that they don't trust their directs or their directs' directs, right? They haven't figured out how to get communication flowing throughout the organization. So they decide they'll just take it into their own hands and they'll do it all. And they're typically poor delegators, and there's all sorts of common characteristics.
Control freaks. Yeah. Yeah. And look, if you're thinking things change too fast in your organization to wait every 6 months to keep people on the same page, we can understand that. That's not an unheard of reaction to the pace of change in the world today. But frankly, we think you may be using the wrong tool. You may be using a hammer to screw in a screw. We recommend frequent managerial communications, and that would be the way that people would be updated on things. And you could go back to our earlier guidance about managerial communications, look at the sample communication plan, and there are all kinds of recommendations in there. And you may be thinking too narrowly for the town hall agenda in terms of announcing every new process improvement or every new project or whatever, which is probably too much for a town hall, particularly as your organization gets bigger.
Right.
So about twice a year is probably good.
Now, you mentioned the difference between routine town halls and change town halls. And we're not going to talk a lot about change town halls today, but you made a point earlier, you probably want to get a few routine ones under your belt before you do a change one. Even if you're thinking you need to change one, you know, get some under your belt.
The number of managers I've talked to who said, I just had a really bad town hall. I said, well, tell me about it. I said, well, I really wasn't ready to do it, but my boss said I needed to. So I put one together and it was just terrible. And I really think they're not behind this process. So I need you to help me create some communications. I'm like, dude, it wasn't the idea. They're okay with the idea. You just suck in front of a group. You're awful and they hate you. You should die. I mean, I shouldn't have said that. Ideally, you'll have one or two or even three town halls that are routine before you have to have a slightly more tense one around layoffs or an acquisition or, you know, salary freezes, those kinds of things. Or your company gets delisted on the stock exchange. What do you have? I remember a couple of years ago, a guy called me and said, I need to know what I should say. You know, whom should I tell? And I said, everybody knows, dude. What do you mean everybody knows? Nobody follows the stock market of the company. I said, yeah, they do. You guys have a 401k. There are plenty of people, 60, 70% of your people that are in stock and so on. They get updates and they're aware. Well, what should I do? Maybe then I don't need to have one at all. No, you need to have one, but they already know. And so then you got to think about, what do you want to say? What does it mean to be delisted? And then, of course, he asked me, he said, it is because our stock dropped below a dollar, right? I said, yeah, that's why. I was like, wow, you're pretty senior to be asking that. But anyway, he really wasn't ready to stand in front of a bunch of people. He said, we started going through sample questions and he said, I don't think these are good questions. I said, well, then you ought not to get in front of them because these are the questions you're going to get.
People are going to ask you. You better have answers.
Yeah, I told congressmen when I was working with congressmen, I'd say all the time, I'd say, first of all, talking to your constituents is not the same as being on the floor. That's very different. And even though it's a small group, you're not in a meeting. And I said, you need to get good at talking to them so that when you talk to them about hard things, some relationship will already be established and you'll know how to talk to them. And the guy said, okay, how do I talk to them? I said, well, they're just your friends and neighbors, you just go sit down and talk to them. He says, well, what if it's stuff they really shouldn't want to know about? Well, that's the thing about constituents, congressmen. They want to know what they want to know. Well, that's not what I want to talk about. Well, you just try to stay on message. And those were actually town hall meetings. This was long before town halls got turned into something else. But yeah, it happens all the time that people aren't ready to be in front of a group and they haven't practiced, and it's a wrong time to be in front of a group when you're not practiced. And guys, you know what? I know a lot of high eyes who are listening to us right now said, I'll be fine. And I'll tell you one of my pet peeves. I don't think I've ever shared it before on air. One of my biggest pet peeves is trainers who come to me and say, I can train anything. Just give me a night before and I'll be ready. The idea that standing up in front of someone and being a smooth-talking, smiling, glib person who can tell a joke and talk quickly and look people in the eye makes you credible is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard in my life. In order to be good in front of an audience, you have to know your material brilliantly, because it is all about the audience. It's not about you. People who say they can study something overnight and be ready are making it about themselves. And that's the fundamental flaw of 95% of the speakers in the world. They think it's about themselves. If you want to be great, it must be about the audience. Of course, to make it about the audience, you have to know your material so well that it's second nature, so you can focus on the audience and not the material when you're presenting. So if you're not a good presenter and you're speaking about stuff that's tense or difficult, you're going to stink at it. And there's no shame in that unless it causes to be your team, your organization to be ineffective. There is shame, though, in knowing you could be better and not practicing and not having a chance, not holding a routine on all town hall. Look, if nothing else, if you haven't had one and you've been in the same job for the last 2 years and you've got skips, hold a town hall next month. Say, I've never done it before, we're going to do a town hall. And if you're thinking, well, is now a good time? If you haven't done one before and you've been in your job for 2 years, now is a good time, right? Yeah. And look, if you're not a great public speaker and you're going to be public speaking at a town hall, it's a public speaking venue, you'll be standing, everybody else will sit. It will be sitting, it's classic, right? You're not just running a meeting. Yeah, that needs to happen. The meeting running needs to happen, but it's your speaking that's going to matter. So if you're not a good speaker, or if you're an infrequent speaker, which is the same thing, by the way, practice wouldn't hurt. Now, we know we probably can't convince you to practice, although I used to love it. Mike Swinson, who presents for us sometimes, says, oh, yeah, I've done it 5, 6, 7 times already. You know, he stood in his office and gave the entire presentation and then did it again and videotaped it and watched it and did it again. But if we can't get you to do that, which if you want to be great, that's how you get great, is to do it 1,000 times. Then what you do is you schedule a routine town hall to get used to the venue and seeing the people and getting the vibe and practicing. And after 3 or 4 of them, then you can do a change one. And the process will corrupt the content as little as you possibly can make it do so.
Yeah. Now, we talked about if you only have 5 directs, you're not going to do a town hall meeting. You're just going to do a staff meeting, right?
Yeah. You're going to look over your shoulder and say, we lost some oil pressure, boys.
There you go. Well, let's talk about the other extreme. You know, when you start getting a large organization, is large town halls, you know, 500, 600, 1,000 people, is that okay? Or what's your guidance there?
Yeah, you can. Most people who are listening to this probably wouldn't do well in front of 1,000 people all at once. Whenever somebody says to me, I'm speaking to a big group for the first time and I don't know what to do, I'm reminded of the line in Princess Bride where Carrie Elwes, the Dread Pirate Roberts, has to fight Andre the Giant, who was on a plane with me one day years ago, by the way, in Alexandria, Louisiana. And he said, the reason you're beating me, Andre the Giant says, I think his name is Fezzik. He says, the reason you're beating me is because I'm used to fighting in large groups, gangs of 15 to 20 people, but fighting one person, I need different tactics. You put 1,000 people in a room, and there are executives who make $750,000 a year who will freeze in front of that audience. Even when the audience is sitting quietly, staring at them diligently, they won't be able to do it. But look, we recommended with skip levels, I think our recommendation, it's been years ago now, but I've always been saying about 20 people. And the reason we say 20 people is twofold. One, for skip levels, one is most managers can handle that. And two, it doesn't create physical limitations in terms of space. And the real big reason is it allows more intimacy, which increases the chances of questions. If you meet with 1,000 people, there are easily 950 of them who think that you can't see them and don't think they have to ask a question. And so they won't, thinking they might get out 20 minutes earlier. So you put 4 or 5 level organizations together. I mean, you talk about an individual contributor, a manager, and a director, and a senior director, and an AVP, and then a VP. You know, you can't do that 20 people at a time. It just doesn't work. Logistically, it's impossible. All you'd be doing is what amount to small town halls.
Right. Well, sometimes they're spread geographically anyways, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you can have big town halls. 100, you can have 200, you can have 500 if you had the space for it. Now, the thing is, if you have a 200-person organization or bigger, the idea of you being able to stop what everybody else is doing in terms of staffing levels and so on, having one meeting to make it easy on you, it's just not going to happen. You're going to discover that really, really quickly, the law of large numbers gets to you and you can't get everybody in one place at one time. And the moment you get above 250 or so, you find that they tend to be spread out. Even being on different floors matters. We had this happen in Manhattan a while ago. Mm-hmm. My guy said, I never come down to 18. Really? You won't? Well, I never do. Well,
we might as well be 1,000 miles away if they're on a separate floor.
Yeah.
We found that to be true.
Oh, I have to use the elevators I don't normally use. Well, where are they? Well, they're right next to the ones I normally use, but the ones I normally use take me down to the lobby. It's like an express from here on 24. But to go to 18, I have to go to the other bank and go down to 18 and then... Wow, dude, high barriers to life-changing events. So let me give you an example. You mentioned geographic dispersion, right? Let's assume for a moment we got a 500-person org, right? 300 of those folks are in one location. We're going to call that downtown. 100 of the 500 are in another location about an hour away. Let's call that, say, the suburbs. 50 of them are in another state, let's say in a city in another state, we're going to call Minneapolis or Minnesota. We'll say Minnesota. They're in Minnesota. They're actually all in Minneapolis, okay? And the other 50 are in three different locations. This is how it always is, right? 15 or so each near customer locations. You know, let's say one in California, one in Arizona, one in Georgia. So you can't get everybody together. And yet, it's not that hard to arrange town halls to make this happen. In fact, if you wanted to, you'd get it all done within 5, 6, 7 days without too much trouble. First thing you'd do is you'd start locally and you'd schedule 5 meetings over probably no more than 3 days at the downtown location. 5 people, 5 meetings, 300 downtown. That's going to be 60 per meeting. The first one you'll only have 40 probably, and the others you'll have more. Yeah, a couple of people are going to be on travel or out sick or on vacation. So for those few, you're going to videotape it if you can. And we'll talk about streaming here in just a minute. Usually, I mean, I've seen it done where I've been consulting a guy with 500. You can keep it down to about 10 people that miss that because you encourage attendance in the right ways. And you can easily say to somebody, look, I know you're supposed to be on travel that week, but one of the meetings is on Monday. Leave a day later for travel that week and leave on Tuesday or leave on Monday afternoon and come to the Monday morning meeting. Well, I've already bought my ticket. Okay, change it anyway. I'll pay for it. Then you do 2 meetings out in the suburbs. You could do those in the same week. One in the morning, one in the afternoon of the same day. Or you could do 2 mornings in a row, one Wednesday, one Thursday, for instance. Okay? You do 1 meeting in Minnesota, where there are 100 people, or you could do 2, depending upon the staffing meetings and staffing needs in your organization and the operational tempo up there in Minneapolis. You could do it in the same day, or you could do 2 mornings in a row again, or 2 afternoons in a row if you want. And you would do 1 meeting in each of the 3 other locations. So we're talking about what? 5, you've got 5 plus, how many did we say? A couple out in the suburbs. So that's 5 plus 2 is 7, plus 2 in Minnesota is 9, plus 3 more is 12, okay? 12 times 90 minutes, if you go 90 minutes, is, what is that, 18 hours. That's all it takes, not counting travel. And who counts travel anyway? And you just do, again, 1 meeting in each of the 3 locations. Now, at the smaller locations, you've got some coordination here to be sure that if you're only going to do 1 meeting, and look, for 15 people, folks, you don't need to have more than 1 meeting. You make sure it's on a day that works for them. And talk to those people first about what days will work. And don't let one guy just say, I can't do it for 3 more weeks. I mean, I joked earlier about power, but if Mike was 2 levels down from me and my admin said to me, I'm having trouble scheduling the people in Georgia, I'd say, get Mike on the phone for me. Okay.
I bet you would.
And he says, and Mike says, yeah, it's going to be hard for the next couple of weeks. And I say, I don't care. I want it Thursday. Well, there might be some people not there. No, everybody's going to be there. Tell me what you think trumps this. Oh, well, you know, I think there's some customer visits. Customers will change it, change the visit. Well, one of the customers is kind of picky. Okay, fine. You go to that customer and then you fly up here this week and come to the meeting that we're going to have. Right? You absolutely can do it. I'm amazed. Oh yeah, the next 3 weeks are really busy. People tell me that all the time, and I look at their calendar. You're not that busy. People in the White House are busy. People at Whitehall are busy, you know. But people in Berlin are busy, and Paris are busy, and Rome are busy. But, you know, in the government, but not somebody running a sales office in Georgia. No offense to Georgians. My folks live in Savannah. You can do it. Just don't take 4 weeks to get it done. By that time, it's old news in the fourth week. And yeah, look, by all means, when you're going to different locations, use a video to stream the meeting to others if that technology is doable for you. No problem there at all. And I say that because I know some people are going to ask, and so I should sure do it. But guys, let's not kid ourselves, okay? If you start having half of the people at the meeting actually doing so at another location and they're there virtually, it's going to be a lousy meeting. The fact is that behavioral issues end up trumping technological marvels every darn time. We had a cast several years ago about teleconferences, and I don't think we really went hard at how bad teleconferences were with people on mute and people forgetting to be on mute and texting and Facebooking and sending emails and hearing everybody typing, oh, I'm taking notes. Like hell you're taking notes. What a joke. And then somebody says something dumb and you hear all the little text message sounds people forget to mute. And
yeah, those are always really funny. I love those.
Yeah. It's like, really? Come on, guys. And then you say, oh, and people, you ask a person a question and they don't hear them for like 3 seconds. You ask me, oh, sorry, I was on mute. No, you weren't. You wandered away. You literally weren't paying attention. You didn't hear your name. So this is important enough. If you're going to travel and if you're going to meet everybody, it doesn't make much sense for us to say everybody's going to be there, but feel free to ignore us for an hour and a half. That's not any way to be effective. People are going to be texting. They're going to be emailing. Nowadays, they're not going to want to go to a room somewhere to watch. They're going to tout the technology that allows them to get that video stream on their desktop, which is going to allow them to surf the web and post tweets and check Facebook and do all that stuff that they probably wouldn't do if they're sitting in the front row of your conference, in front row of your town hall. So just recognize, be careful about that. I would urge you to say, you want to do that, that's fine, but recognize you're not going to have the same experience. Some cultures have adapted to it, and that's okay. The vast majority of places I've been, we've consulted some really high-tech clients that we're supposed to be doing a conference call and it's supposed to be the web pages available and we're all dialed into this special thing. It never works. About the only thing that I've seen works brilliantly is Cisco Telepresence. Other than that, I don't put too much stock in it. And if I were you and you were saying, Mark, what would you do? I'd say, no, I'd take a video of it and I make people watch the whole darn video. And I know you say, well, that's kind of boring. Yeah, but okay, but I'd rather not have them sit there in the meeting and ignore it and then go around and tell people who haven't been to the meeting yet, oh, I didn't pay much attention. And apparently you can get away with it because I did it and I got credit for being there. So technology is great, but what's important, more important is listening.
Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you again next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.